Welcome to the Business of Government Hour, a conversation about management with a government executive who is changing the way government does business. The Business of Government Hour is produced by the IBM Center for the Business of Government, which was created in 1998 to encourage discussion and research into new approaches to improving government effectiveness. You can find out more about the center by visiting us on the web at businessofgovernment.org. And now, the Business of Government Hour.
Welcome to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host and managing editor of the Business of Government magazine. Our government is facing unprecedented challenges, and stable labor management relations are needed more than ever. To that end, what role does the Federal Labor Relations Authority play in this area? How is the Federal Labor Relations Authority revitalizing, reinventing, and re-engaging itself? And what does the future hold for the Federal Labor Relations Authority? We will explore these questions and so much more with our very special guest, Carol Waller Pope, chairman of the Federal Labor Relations Authority. Carol, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Also joining our conversation from IBM is Maria Paz Barrientos. Maria, welcome.
Thanks, Michael.
Great. Before delving into specifics, Carol, can we start off by learning more about your agency? Would you give us a brief overview of the history and mission of your agency?
Well, the FLRA, Federal Labor Relations Authority, is the sole agency responsible for federal sector labor management relations. We're modeled, if you will, organizationally after the National Labor Relations Board. We have a similar mission. Theirs is private sector jurisdiction. Ours is federal sector. So federal agencies, federal unions, we have jurisdiction over the labor relations and labor law of 1.6 federal non-postal employees. We are a creation of the Civil Service Reform Act of 1978 under President Carter. Prior to that, some of our function, not all of it, but some of it was performed under executive orders dating back to President Kennedy in 1962.
So it's such an important mission. Could you give us a sense of the operational footprint of your agency? How is it organized, the size of its budget, and the number of employees?
We're small but mighty. We take our mission seriously because what we recognize is if there are unhealthy labor management relations in the federal sector, then it affects the federal government's mission. Certainly, we're structured in a way that we have 7 regional offices under the auspices of the General Counsel, which is a separate component. The leadership, the political leadership of the agency is a total of 5 presidential appointees, 3 members, a General Counsel, and a chairman of the Federal Service Impasses Panel, as well as 6 additional members of the panel. The General Counsel and the 3 members of the authority component, which I'm a part of, as well as chairman and CEO of the entire agency. But the 3 members in the General Counsel are Senate-confirmed positions for a set term, 5-year term. The term runs whether you're in it or not. It also extends in a holdover basis until you're replaced with certain limitations that are by law. We are some 130 employees currently. Our current budget, and we, like every other government agency, is waiting to get out of the continuing resolution status that we're in right now. We're hopeful for passage of a $26 million budget for fiscal year 11, which started October 1. I became chairman of the agency in 2009, February 2009, appointed by President Obama's chairman. I was a sitting member of the authority. I began my political role with the agency in 2000 as a member and became chairman after the election in 2008. We're struggling to increase our budget and improve our mission. We've had success. We have support from the Office of Management and Budget and the administration. I think there is recognition that we have an important mission because if there's a lot of labor unrest, then it affects the mission of the respective agencies.
So what about your role as chairman of your agency? What are the specific roles and responsibilities as chairman? And how do you relate with the other components? You've mentioned general counsel. What's your relationship with that particular component?
Well, it's interesting. There's distinct jurisdiction and lines of authority among the presidential appointees. And just to begin with, as a member, one of 3 members of the authority, we have a caseload, a specific legal jurisdiction type of cases. We're the last administrative review We review arbitration decisions that come up through contract disputes and go to private arbitrators hired by agencies and unions over their disputes. If they appeal an arbitration decision, it comes to the three members. Each of the three members have a case staff, a case writer staff, and are autonomous with respect to our adjudicatory role. We issue and vote on decisions independently. We look to have I think it's important to our mission where we have unanimity in our decisions. It provides the best clarity for our parties and our legal analysis of the law. We apply basically the Civil Service, the Federal Service Labor Relations Act is the statute that we administer. We're a regulatory agency. We don't initiate contact with agencies or unions. We only have jurisdiction to address a dispute if there's something filed with our agency. That would be an unfair labor practice charge that initiates in the regional offices. So the general counsel, a presidential appointee, Julie Clark, supervises all of the regional office employees in those seven cities and a headquarters staff. Her work is completely autonomous. The regional directors make the first decision on an unfair labor practice charge. They get the bulk of the caseload. Some 4,200 cases annually are filed in one of the regional offices. And they are our public face, if you will, because they interact with the parties. When those cases, unfair labor practice charges that they find merit to, and they do a great job of resolving most of the disputes that come before them. One thing to make clear, our statute sets forth and establishes rights for individual employees, so it's a rights-based statute, rights for agencies and managers, rights for unions to engage in collective bargaining, to rights of employees to organize a union, but also to be free from discrimination if they choose not to be a part of a union. So unions have a responsibility to represent all of the employees, regardless of whether they're dues-paying members. With respect to my role, it's twofold at least. My administrative role as chairman and CEO is the overall administrative, fiscal, policy-making responsibility as chairman and CEO. As a member, I have no greater authority than the other two members with respect to our case decision role, our adjudicatory role. Any member can issue a dissenting opinion if they don't agree, but one of the things I'm proud of is with the current complement of members, and only two members can be from the same political party at any one time. We pretty much are bipartisan when we come in the door. Obviously, as political appointees, we start with a political affiliation, but we administer the law based on the facts and legal precedent independent of our political affiliation. I'm blessed with a collaborative relationship and a very good working relationship with Member Ernie DeBester and Member Thomas Beck. The presidential appointees also meet monthly because it's my interest as a chairman is to have a shared vision and shared priorities. And so we meet monthly on regularly to talk about the agency-wide budget. I think we're effective, one, because we're an agency. Our political appointments were filled pretty quickly after President Obama became president, after the inauguration. And unlike some agencies that are still awaiting some of their senior political appointees to be in place to establish policy guidance and leadership. So we've been fortunate in that regard.
Now, it sounds like a really interesting organizational structure and looking at, you know, how you fit into that and your roles and responsibility. What are the main challenges that you faced so far?
It's an interesting question because challenges are opportunities. I inherited the agency, I would say, in the lowest point in its 30-year history. So that was a challenge. I think the biggest challenge was that I walked into the door, literally, but I was already there at the agency, when we were the 34th small agency in the employee satisfaction ranking out of 34. My tagline, if you will, was, we have nowhere to go but up. And it was a challenge. I had been there during the low years of employee morale, and I knew that you don't turn around a culture or improve morale overnight. So one of the challenges was managing expectations that new leadership, whether it was myself or former Chairman Beck, who looked at what the issues are with respect to employee morale. We knew we had a lot of key positions at every level, in every office, in every component that were vacant. What happened during our low period is that our fiscal management was somewhat ineffective, and so we didn't fill positions, even though we had money to fill positions. And as a result, Congress looked and said, after 3 years of that kind of management, you must not need this money. And we had a $3 million recession for the first time from Congress in our agency history. You don't get back money overnight. You don't rebuild your budget resources overnight. Culture change doesn't happen overnight. So the adverse changes that were impacting our performance did not happen overnight, and I had to be clear within my own expectations of my performance as well as what I communicated to employees that we can't reverse it overnight, that it's going to take some time. And really, the largest challenge is improving our mission performance. If we can timely resolve a dispute, so to get more timely with respect to our caseload, was one of the biggest challenges and the largest priority that every manager and political appointee shared that view. And we worked together to improve it.
Changing gears just a little bit, can you talk about your career path and how you started your career, how you started in government, how you got to your current role as chairman?
I started thinking about law school a little late, my senior year in college. And I was in Boston, and I'm first-generation college educated. I grew up in Pittsburgh, and I didn't appreciate it at the time, but Pittsburgh and a blue-collar town and local labor news is the headline in Pennsylvania, in Pittsburgh in particular. My dad was a steel worker. I grew up knowing what it meant to be on strike. If the main breadwinner's on strike, the family's on strike. And so without really understanding it, because I didn't go to law school to become a labor lawyer, but I guess labor law and labor relations is in my blood. Just as I had one foot in the School of Social Work, Simmons School of Social Work, I'm a Simmons College undergraduate in Boston, I decided, well, maybe law school was, maybe I want to be on that side of the table and not the social worker, the jury consultant in the room. So I went to Northeastern Law School, and it was certainly a focus on public interest law. I haven't thought of it before, but the economic challenges were similar in the late 70s and when I graduated from law school. And I did a mass mailing at the time of resumes to every government agency and heard from a couple and started at Department of Labor. When the FLRA was created, I was fortunate enough to get a job in the Boston Regional Office. I was in the Boston office from 1980 to 94, and it was a wonderful experience for me to learn what our statute means in an active way. Since 94 to 2000, I served as FLRA management. And so once I got into management, I was considered for the political appointment of member in 2000, and I was initially appointed by President Clinton. And that's how I transitioned from a career employee to a political appointee and a part of the FLRA leadership.
How has the Federal Labor Relations Authority enhanced the way it operates? We will ask its chairman, Carol Waller-Pope, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.